We'll have both speakers come back up now and maybe entertain some questions for us, either one or both. I'm going to start it off. Actually, I'd like to ask Mike a question. First of all, I'm just curious, Mike, are the buyers of these feeder calves willing to share information back to a producer if solicited regarding the performance of those cattle, whether it be feedlot and or carcass? And I'll just pass this down along here.
Can you hear me with this one? Okay. I'm going to answer that question the same way I answered the does preconditioning pay question sometimes. And there are some feeders who feel that if they're going to take 100% ownership, they're not sharing anything with anybody. And then there are other feeders who would be more than willing to share the information as long as they were able to deal with it in whatever their marketing quantity is. And what we have found out that if you have 25 identified and traceable calves in a pen of 225 and they market the entire pen, the reason you're not getting carcass data back is not because they don't want you to have it. It's just that they're not going to go through and jump through the hoops that it takes to track those 25 head out of that entire group. So, I mean, my advice in that process is if you are interested in that and that is a criteria, then you need to make those arrangements while you're marketing your calves. And honestly, that's very difficult to do if those calves are marketed through an auction market because they may not all go to the same place. They may go to different parts of the country. They may go to different yards that have different philosophies. So if that is a one of your criteria and something that you're very, very interested in, you have to do something like Imogene's group has done, or you have to market direct, or you have to take some role in making that a term of sale. And I'm telling you, at HealthTrack, we have all the vaccination records, the birth records, the weaning records, all that kind of stuff tied back to an RFID tag. It's extremely easy to share that information, but that doesn't mean that all those calves are going to end up in some critical mass format somewhere where that exchange is easy to take place.
Questions? I'll repeat it. The question was, how did they arrive at a starting point to price the calves at the feed yard?
Since we sold 50% ownership in the calves, we started out asking feedlots for bids on the cattle, and not always, but generally, of course, the higher bid was the one that got it, and that is the price that we applied to it at that point. Since we are now dealing with one feed yard, and we can't go on commingling day and say, hey, we've got these calves now ready to go, we have to make arrangements ahead of time. He's been using a history on our cattle as far as what that we've sent before at that particular time, and he'll say, okay, we're going to estimate this group at is going to weigh 700 pounds, this one's going to weigh 650 pounds, and this is the price that we're willing to pay for 50% ownership on those.
Questions? Question was, how did the group value your time, Imogene's time, in her role?
I guess since we are one of the larger producers in the group, I consider a lot of my time that I put into it as benefiting us as well as the rest of the group. I do get a small stipend for all my time and efforts of putting the information in the computer and sorting out the little twists and things like that associated with the money that's returned to the group. It's not a high money maker, put it that way.
I've got a question for both of them. With your years of experience in terms of adding value, if you were going to assess what percentage of the added value is from a genetic improvement and what percentage of the added value is from management, how would you answer that?
That's tough. Well, obviously, we made a lot of progress with our genetic selection through using high-accuracy bulls. I don't know what percentage to put on that. But at the same time, we, as a group, have made a lot of progress as well in the weight gain and that sort of thing, and our management of the calves after weaning. The first year, I thought when we decided to commingle in December, I thought we'd really be pushing it to have 600-pound calves just based on the management of the group. And now we're selling calves. Well, this year we went in November, early November, and we've got calves there that are weighing over 800 pounds going into a feedlot, same age as they were before. So I can't put a percentage on that, but there's obviously pros to both ends of it.
In our system, the vast majority of economic return for participating in our program is from process management. And I will start that off with just a general statement, and I know there's other people in this room that understand this, but in any one marketing venue, there can be four or five times more variation in genetic and flesh and fill and phenotype and frame in any groups of calves than there ever will be in a premium for agent source verification or VAC 45. So the genetic difference in cattle is and draft sizes and fill and color and all those kind of things make way more difference in the value or the price those cattle bring than whether it's got a program tag in it too. And you might think that's a strange statement coming from a guy that manages one of those programs, but we have collected complete data downloads from many different sale venues in many different environments and compared them with non-agent source and non-VAC 45 cattle and same week, same location and those kind of things. And you can always, I mean, literally with one or two exceptions, maybe 2006 when corn went to $7 a bushel or whatever it was around here, with that anomaly taken out, you can always find, based on the weight range, somewhere between 5 and, in some years, we've had a $14 hundredweight advantage on the cattle in our program over non-program cattle. But yet, if you went and interviewed everybody that sat and watched that sale on that given day, they would never tell you that. They come out, as Imogene said, within the numbers that of people that have participated in that program. It is extremely difficult to sit in those stands and see another set of cattle come in that aren't wearing a tag that bring more than the ones that yours brought. Well, it might be entirely related to the draft size, the phenotype, the frame of those animals, the fill on those animals, I mean, the time of day, whether there are certain corporate buyers in the room or not. I mean, there is so much variability in draft to draft to draft to cattle, and it is so much higher than the standard premiums that it's very, very difficult to see. But I got a little bit off your question, but in our program and what we've seen is you make your greatest advances in putting cost-efficient gain on cattle, and it's much less stressful to wean them at the ranch of origin. You get much better levels of immunity in that environment, lifelong immunity. You eliminate the need for antibiotics. You take a significant amount of shrink out of the transaction process. It just is a much better environment to get calves weaned and to get them prepared for the next step. And if you don't believe that, I mean, backgrounders have known that for 50 years. They've been the most profitable segment of the cattle industry for at least 50 years. And that's what they've done. That's how they've done it. So it's not rocket science.
We've got time. More questions?
The question was considering the low level of participation of producers in our area, why is that? Some of the producers, they don't like to have to jump through the hoops that we require for the VAC 45 program. Some of them will look at, when I gave the slide that showed a $37 head profit over the last 11 years, they'll say, oh, that's just not enough profit for me to take that risk of losing money in the feed yard. Some of them just can't sleep at night when they listen to the futures markets. And if they can't sleep at night because the Fed cattle price dropped a dollar today, well, it's not for them. Some of them just don't have the time or won't take the time to get the cattle processed properly so that they can possibly go to the fat grounder by early November. A lot of them are still trying to wean calves in December. We're still the show-me state, of course, where it takes quite a while to get them to make strides forward, put it that way, I guess.
Anyone else?
The average age of harvest of the cattle is probably 14, 15 months. Most of our producers tend to be February calvers, and our cattle are going out in anywhere from April to late May so far, and we still have a small group in the feedlot right now that will be going, I would guess, mid-July.
John asked a question of what the goals for our program are. I wish I could answer that just totally bluntly. I will say this, that the cow herd, as you all know, is shrinking, and it has always been our goal as a farm supply cooperative that MFA is, it has always been our goal to keep as many cow-calf producers in business as possible. So from a 50,000-foot level, our goal would be to keep people in the business. Beyond that, the value of information and being able to track animals back to their origin seems to be increasing, and I don't see that particular thing going away. Some packers have even specifically indicated that even if Japan goes to 30 months, they're going to still insist on some form of PVP or QSA or who knows in that regard, and they've gotten used to that profile. So I think there's going to continue to be value. So if that value stays there, that would be one of our tools to keep people in business, is to continue to provide them with that opportunity to get in that process. We do a lot of that work for them. We have retail locations all over our market area in Missouri and the states surrounding Missouri. There's probably 3.5-4 million cows in our market area, and so the same question that was asked of Imogene about percentage, it's a very small percentage of producers that participate in any of these programs. And I would have to say a further goal, and this is a difficult thing to say in public, because in our particular supply system, a lot of our biggest customers are the current and traditional marketing systems. And we continually get more interest from our producers to participate in more cooperative type marketing ventures where this information gets easier to move both directions. And I don't see the inevitability of that slowing down or stopping. I suspect, well, we have a lot of producers that do market direct and that we help manage that information flow for them. And I just see more of an interest in the kind of cooperative marketing things moving forward, and that's just an eventual goal of ours, I guess, would be to participate in that.
from a veterinarian standpoint, I'm like Mike in that I want to keep people in the business. If they aren't raising cattle, I don't have a job. From a producer standpoint, and I think that's probably pretty uniform throughout the producers that are involved, I think profitability is the big issue. If we started losing money year after year, I think we'd go back to the old traditional marketing system, possibly with some little quirks added to it. But profitability overall is the biggest thing, I believe. Most of them really are using the information they get back to make decisions. I did have two producers involved. One of them is mostly row crop and just has a few cows for lawnmowers, as I would call them. And I can tell when their cattle, when I enter the information on their cattle, they aren't using the information, but they still are profitable, but they aren't as profitable as the other members of the group. And then another producer suddenly made the decision, I shouldn't say suddenly, was making the decision to retire. And so the last couple of years, they let the bull selection criteria slide. And I could see that their information fell in the, when I was entering the information.
Question. I'll try to encapsulate Larry's question. Basically, the fact that it's easy in this type of a setting to focus on terminal traits. As from a producer standpoint, you find yourself focusing on something like carcass weight, where the real value is created. How are they looking at the maternal cow herd component of their profit equation with the retained ownership?
On our side, personally, we know we have probably too much milk in our cow herd. So when we go looking for sires, we do try to not get carried away with milk. So many of our group up in Northeast Missouri, the color's got to be black, it seems, or nobody wants anything to do with it. So that leads us to tending to go with the breed that started the black to begin with. So that's the majority of the sires in the group. We ourselves did have some color influence, and some of our biggest cows are gray, and as a result that's why we're trying to add some red to pull that size down a little bit. Still, they've got the milk influence. From the standpoint of other cows or other producers and their decisions, it seems like they're all sticking with black. It's got to be black, or they don't want to make that change yet. Does that answer your question at all? Yes, there is a lot of variation, and we ourselves really don't want a seven-frame bull anymore. At the same standpoint, we probably don't want to drop to fives either. We usually look for in the six range. The other producers in the group, for the most part, their cows aren't as big as ours, but they are watching the mature size on the bulls they breed by, too. I do get to see their bull selections when they bring them through for BSEs. So we don't have any of those extremes for the most part within our group of people.
I don't want to be too depressing, but I would be thrilled if we had a significant percentage of the commercial cow-calf producers in the part of the country that has more beef cows per acre than any other part of the country who would even tag their cows and know which calf came from that cow. So I very much appreciate your comments, and that is probably, and that is a responsibility of a lot of you in this room, that is probably our biggest challenge, is to get this population of folks that manage the beef herd in this country interested in those issues. And I'm telling you, we still got guys that the bull they're using this year is the one that escaped the knife last year, and market cattle when the farm payment is due, or the kids are home from college, or they finally got the little boogers caught, or whatever the reason is. I mean, I'm just trying to be as pragmatic as I can, but it is a serious question and a serious issue, but it has not yet been perceived in the bulk of, and I'm not talking about all little producers either. I'd say there are some very, very large producers in our area that see them once a year still. So that kind of education and information process is very important and yet is very difficult.
And I would agree with you on that. There is such a significant number of the producers in my practice that, do you know somebody that's got a bull for sale? I don't want to go pay $1,500 for a bull. And what can I say? I can't be of much help to them.
And I think really that's wherever Barry's at. When we talk about thinking about the mystery versus the puzzle, the truth can't be told to a lot of producers. It has to be discovered. And if they don't really care to solve the mystery, it's a hard nut to crack. Any other comments, questions? Here's one back of the room. You'll have to talk loud.
The question is whether we track feed conversion, average daily gain, and cost of gain to the extent that we can in the feed yard. The average daily gain has to be backed into. I don't have individual percentage yields on each individual animal from the feed yard that we use. So I have a general percentage yield for the whole group, and then I just have to apply that average percentage across the board to the individual carcass weights that I do have. So is it very accurate? Probably not. It gives an idea. Cost of gain then is no more accurate than is our actual average daily gain. Feed conversion, again, is a group feed conversion. We don't have the individuals.
Well, let's give our speakers a round of applause, and I'll turn it back to John.